Okay, we will call to order the July 2nd, 2014 meeting of the Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Heller?
Here.
McGill?
Aye.
Steelmeyer? Scarlett?
Here.
Okay, you have all received a an agenda for this evening. Do we have any changes or additions to those agenda items? Okay, there are none, though. All in favor of approval of the agenda for tonight's meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Yeah. You also received in your packets the meeting minutes of the April 28th, 2014 minutes. Do we have any revisions or corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, then the minutes will stand approved as approved in the packets. Has everyone this evening signed in? Should have signed in on your way in. We appreciate that very much. I might turn around, and for those who may be new to the process, to at least review how we go about our deliberations. First of all, we'll ask the planning staff to present a staff report. We will ask for any letters or communications received by the public prior to the meeting. We will ask the applicant to present their case in whatever manner they would like to do that. We will solicit comments from the public if there are general comments that would like to be heard. If you are speaking, we would ask everyone to approach the podium and identify yourself so we can get that in the minutes. After all the public hearings have been had, we may allow the applicant, if there are still things that are hanging, to present a closing statement at that point in time. Then we will close the hearing for purposes of deliberation, and we will deliberate right in front of you and come up with a resolution this evening. So it's not something that goes to a later sort of date. So thank you very much. Do we have any public comments in general that are not related to this evening's cases? Okay. Any old businesses people would like to bring? Okay, we have a couple of items then that were tabled at our last minute's meeting, and the first one would be CUP 05-14, the Black Conditional Use Permit. Do we have any additional information?
I don't believe we have any additional information on that one, so staff would recommend that just remains laid on the table.
We need a motion to take it off the table. Nope, we just take it off the table. And go from there and make sure we get our procedures correct. In going back even to the minutes of the last time around, as I went back and looked at that, where we left this off was essentially we got down to a point where we were having some challenges. So we did approve the findings of fact. We went to the decision, and we did approve the motion to adopt the decision, and we got down to the point of, that wasn't the church one. My sorry, we had two black ones last month. As we went down through that on this one then, we went through the staff presentation, we went through the applicants, turned around and had the board presented the alternatives that were in front of us, and we moved at that point in time to table. So we did not go through any of the steps that were associated beyond that. So we're essentially, I won't say at the beginning, that would be an incorrect one. But I don't have a printout this evening of the black.
No, because it's tabled and we didn't have any additional presentation. Okay. Wouldn't make a motion on it.
And I didn't have that printed out. Do you have a copy that I could look at?
Of the staff report? Or the DNO?
This particular document.
The decision order? I don't have one printed out.
Okay.
I've also set a submittal deadline a submittal deadline for the applicant to submit additional items to be submitted by July 14th.
And there was nothing submitted prior to that time?
that's still upcoming this month in July. So something could still be submitted up until July 14th, and then it could come to you again in August. That's how you said it.
What will come to you in August, irregardless of whether or not the applicants provide additional information by that July 14th, is this matter. Staff will ask that you remove it from the table. If new information is submitted, you and the applicant is present, you will consider that. Otherwise, we'll have you go through the decision and order at that time.
Okay. So at this point in time, we will essentially put it back on the table at this point. Good. I'm glad we clarified that, because I was having a hard time getting my documents aligned up with the agendas and the like. So then we will turn around and just leave it on the table. I don't believe, since it's on the table, we have any reason to take any action on that. Okay. Then we do have information this evening. We will move on to VAR 03-14 for the Casey's variance.
First order of action you'll need to do is actually remove it from the table for discussion.
Okay.
And for.
I move
we remove it from the table for discussion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Remove from the table. All in favor indicate. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So we will then open VAR 03-14, the Casey's variance.
And quickly, as it seems that you might have gone through the minutes, I did not, and I don't recall where we left off on this one, if we actually did adopt findings of the facts, our legal principles on this one. And I apologize, I probably should have checked on that, but irregardless of what has happened, what I think we... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
On the Casey's portion, I've got to get my... The findings of fact were indeed passed, and we got down to the time of the decision, and that is the point
where it was tabled.
Tabled.
Okay. Well, irregardless of that, I would first of all recommend when we do go through the decision order that we again go through the findings of fact, because staff has added a few findings of fact to let me know what has happened since that last meeting, more or less, that there has been. That it was tabled at the request of the appellant, that on May 16th we did acquire additional documentation from the appellant. There is one on here I just did notice on number 19 that we'll probably need to massage that one to reflect that those legal notifications were posted for that May meeting, and then we'll have to add a finding of fact regarding the legal notifications that were posted regarding this hearing. Since we did publish that, I believe, and then did send SPOs out for this meeting as well. So we will get an additional finding of fact put on there, but just so you know, when you go through your motions this evening, that will be added. Real quick, what I will do is, just as I mentioned with those findings of fact, that's really the only thing that has changed on the draft decision order that we're presenting to the board tonight. And again, that just reflects what has taken place since that last meeting. What has taken place was on May 16th, we did receive additional documentation from Casey's General Store. Their documentation, as outlined in their letter here, did indicate that they are submitting the following supporting documents. One was an Iowa Department of Transportation recommendation correspondence on those layouts that they had presented. They did present four optional site layouts that they did take into consideration for this site. And lastly, they did have a third party review those layouts and give their recommendation on what they thought would be the most appropriate layout for that. So first of all, I'm assuming that your packets did include those four layouts on there, because I think there will be a lot of stuff that gets drawn around that this evening. Down there.
I do have the four, as I remember, going through them.
Yep, those are the ones I can see from here. So I'm not planning on going through the presentation. The presentation that we have on the screen up here above is the same one that we gave in May for the most part. What I will do is ask that we turn it over to the appellant at this point, since the appellant was the one who asked for the item to be tabled, and let them present their additional information. And at that point, if there's any questions with staff, we'll just follow normal procedure from there.
Fair enough, then. We will end the staff portion. Do you have any other comments from the public?
No, we have not received anything other than a few passerbys that see the development sign out there asking what's going on, but no comments related to it. So.
Applicant, then, if you'd approach the podium and tell what's transpired since we met last.
Great. Good evening, Honorable Chair, members of the board. My name is Wally Pelds with Pelds Engineering Company, 2323 Dixon Street, Des Moines, Iowa, 50316. As mentioned by staff, we did consult with staff in between because it seemed that there was some confusion that we had not done all of our due diligence in researching this site, whether a different size floor could be done, whether we met the legal criteria. Leanne Krell is also here, legal counsel for Casey's General Floor, which wrote that legal brief, the letter that came with the submitted four options, which identified how we meet Iowa law on the three necessities to prove that we do qualify for relief for this site. We also then, I'm being redundant here, but we did get a letter from the Linden Group. It's a consulting firm out of Chicago, Illinois. We wanted to pick someone that was, they didn't know the area, and they looked at the four scenarios that we put together and where we listened to the board's comments last time about, well, couldn't you make a narrower store? Couldn't you make a wider store? Couldn't you make a wider one? And we plotted all of those out, and in their review, they came up to the same conclusion that we did in terms of the fact that there's safety concerns, spacing concerns, standard layouts, and that's basically in a nutshell. If you would happen to have any other questions, we went through options 1, 2, 3, 4, addressing a narrow store. We talked to our architect. He had real concerns about our cooler space, being able to get it to fit in there. Because then all of a sudden, where do I put my counters? Where do I put my coolers? I don't have the display. And again, we do have certain models that we stick to, and we can modify them slightly, but not to the extremes that would be mandated to meet meet the setback requirements at this location. And if you would have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them on the engineering civil design side. We did include the DOT's letter stating that they're asking us to do improvements, including the spacing of the drive, which then also forces us to do a certain type of layout for our turn-ins and turn-ups for our transports. Like I mentioned, legal counsel is here to prove elements 1, 2, and 3 that a board of adjustment is warranted in this case. So.
Go through the, I think probably you'd be the person to do it, go through the options in terms of layout that we have, option 1, 2, 3, and 4. I mean, could you explain to me what you explored and why it doesn't work? Or?
Absolutely. Option 1 is the one we ended up with. That's the one that's in front of you tonight.
That's the original request.
That's the original request. So option 2 was one that meets the setbacks, but we turn it, and we also make a skinnier store. This is where our architectural consultant gets very concerned about the serviceability within the store itself. I mean, we're in a business of convenience, making aisles when it's tight and squished. We have a whole row of coolers. The layouts are the same, deliveries are the same, it comes with the store. And there you can see we, number one, do not have enough parking spaces when we do that one. Number two, that forces the traffic to go right in front of the front door. I mean, we're 6 feet away. And that's a building that actually fits within the required setback. So that is a layout that we put together after listening to your comments saying, all right, well, let's see what would happen if we built a building that complied. I still think I would need relief because I don't have enough parking spaces, and we have a real concern with traffic running right past our front door, and that's not a safe condition for us. We like to have the aisle in front of our doors usually striped with parking stalls on each side. which gives that 20-foot buffer for traffic. So that's option number two.
How short are you on parking with that option? Do you know?
I can jump in real quick on that, too. And one of the unique circumstances in Story County is we don't actually have minimum parking requirements. We have maximum parking allowed. And I could go back. I remember looking at this at one point with the initial layout, and I know they fit within the maximum allowed, so that was not an issue. But I can't recall what that number was. If I do recall right, the parking that they were providing was well under what the maximum that was allowed.
So when we're talking about parking as it relates to option two, what you're really talking about is you don't have as much parking as you'd like with this layout. Is that right?
Number one, I don't have enough for the store, for the size of store. Typically, in a community, it's based on square footage of store. For a retail-type establishment, it's 150 square feet, roughly. That's a national standard, 150 square feet per parking space. So our option that we show on the first page, you know, again, we already don't have enough parking at our site. We don't want to repeat that same problem. So,
and I will add real quick, too, and I think one of the reasons that we do have a maximum instead of a minimum is because we put more of the onus onto the actual company that's coming in to determine the amount of parking they need. And we're saying that, yeah, sure, you can have that amount, but you can't go over this particular amount. So,
if we jump to option number three, that is a smaller prototype of ours that does, again, fit within the setbacks. However, I have turning and delivery issues on my northwest corner. I have certain restrictions on setbacks. My trucks have issues getting past the canopy if someone's fueling. And delivery becomes very cumbersome on this one. Also, it's not a preferred method for me to have. I have to have trash enclosure somewhere. We have to dispose of trash. Having our trash removal being done right in our entrance. The DOT also that doesn't encourage this close of a maneuvering right at the access because they're already making us pave. We've submitted plans to them for a 300-foot deceleration lane to turn into the store off of Highway 69, and they want us to get in and out as fast as possible. So this one just causes me turning maneuvers. Again, it's a smaller store, and I'm still short of parking spaces. But I do comply with my setbacks, barely. But that biggest one there is for the turning templates for my trucks. The third one is that revised store where we've modified our layout where we can make some turns. But then I need the DOT to sell me property, and they're not really keen on doing that. We worked on making things fit. I still have issues. Number one, my approach, all my maneuvers are now within the right-of-way, which they do not want. I've increased my parking. I've increased a couple of things, but again, it's very similar to option three, but these were the things that I took notes on as we discussed it last time. And tried to address and show that we did look at these, specifically the orientation of the building. Could we orientate it in a different direction? And again, my professional opinion is that this is way short of parking spaces because of just the usage that we have, the data that we have. We currently have a problem at our facility right now. So that's roughly what I remember looking at and taking notes on of what your comments were. You know, well, did you look at turning in the store? Did you look at resizing it? Now, where are the
parking spaces between the preferred option and these other ones that you floated? You're talking about a lot of spaces?
Yes.
Quiet, I guess, but
I believe we have an additional 17 spaces. About six.
Here's the holdup that I've got at this point in time. I mean, obviously, I mean, you have my empathy because you're caught through more than one jurisdictional body. But from the DOT, all I'm hearing is the DOT wants this. The DOT desires this. What's the DOT require? Why is the county required to give up everything But the DOT gets to say, I'd like to see this, and therefore that's your requirement. I'm just not feeling that.
It has to do with the National Transportation Safety Board rulings.
Not reference it. Out of what you've submitted so far, it doesn't say that. DOT would like to see. I see words like that. DOT wants. That's not National Safety Traffic Board.
It's per the, they want it designed to their design guide, which is based on the National
Transportation. I didn't reference that. That's my problem, is you haven't given us any references to the DOT requirements. You've told us what DOT wants.
Well, the DOT wouldn't ask for anything that's not in their design standard.
I'm naive enough to believe that?
DOT
wouldn't ask for anything that wasn't?
They cannot.
DOT wants a lot of stuff.
They cannot ask for more than what's in the design standard.
Sorry, I failed to agree with you on that point.
Okay.
That's my hang-up at this point in time is I know regulatory bodies that ask for all kinds of things.
Certainly.
Just because they can.
Certainly.
And to say that they would never ask for anything.
I would say that you're speaking against my credibility because I'm telling you as a professional engineer, they will not exceed these guidelines. I would fight them. We fought them in the past in certain locations where they've asked us to fund $1 million light signal because it's our fault. I will not do that. That's not... Here you're talking about spacing from an intersection. You could ask your land planners as well. They will agree that these standards are set in a book that the DOT uses to design deceleration lanes, spacing from intersections. It is a standard. It's also in the statewide urban design standards book, which is put out jointly by the DOT and by your county if it's accepted. So at the DOT asking is not necessarily asking, they're mandating. I will not get an access permit, period, if I do not comply with these standards. It comes from the head DOT director to next engineer down, and it trickles on down to me.
That may well be. You have not presented that very well. The county's pretty clear. We require 50, you want 5, or whatever the requirements are. That's pretty clear. I'm not seeing the same thing on the DOT side. So it seems to me is that I'm sitting here, we're here for the Story County Board of Adjustments, we're not here for DOT. And I'm having
Understood.
A hard time understanding. I understand what our regs are, and that's what we're required to evaluate this by. Have to.
I would, well.
And I'm not seeing any requirements of DOT, not in what's presented so far.
I will defer to legal counsel to answer some of these questions then.
My name is Leanne Crow. I'm legal counsel at Casey's General Stores, and I understand what you're saying. I sit on a board of adjustment in my home city. I've been on the planning and zoning. I understand exactly what you're saying. But what I will tell you is that everything they have said to us that they are wanting or that they're recommending are consistent with the standards that are required under the standards that Mr. Peltz references. There would be nothing that would be outside of the expectations. They also would be something that we would look to as a reasonable expectation based on those safety standards. And I think as you look at the layout, the DOT is only one component of why we would prefer layout one or option one. Safety is a huge issue to us. And the way that we have our stores designed generally have been vetted through a number of professionals that deal with things like transportation, turning radiuses, anything that you would deal with in an open parking lot where children and families would frequent and how we set our store up and where all that has been vetted on several levels. The option one is clearly, from our professionals, the safest and accommodates the concerns that you would see in the convenience store industry. And if you would refer to the letter that Mr. Peltz referenced from Linden Group, it talks about on option one, we go down to 5 spaces from, on the other options, we go down to 5 spaces as opposed to 22 parking spaces in option one. We already know that the store in Gilbert does not have enough parking. We know that. We know that if we have 2 or 3 employees and there are 5 spaces, we're going to have more than 2 people in that store at some time during the day. At least we hope we do. Otherwise, the store is not going to be profitable and it will not stay open for very long. So it would be self-defeating to do an option that had 5 parking spaces because we know we're creating our own problem. several of the questions that were asked, the letter addresses those with regard to the safety concerns. And that really is the largest concern we have with regard to some of the options that were suggested. And the layout that we have recommended is according to the Linden Group and according to our standards and the ones that we know after constructing 1,800 stores in 14 states, what is the safest way to construct a Casey's convenience store. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Miller.
Portion.
How else can I answer your question?
Well, it's still down to the point that says, well, DOT wants apparently whatever they want, therefore the county has to negate what they want, which has been documented in the land use regulations. And that's what I'm trying to say, well, okay,
right.
Why isn't this an equal playing field? Why isn't this a negotiation?
It is an equal playing field, except for the fact that the DOT standards that they're asking us to do are the acceptable safety standards. What we're asking you to do is, because this is a hardship, because of the uniqueness of the land, and as I lay it out in the written document, we qualify under those standards. And the store that currently exists is old. We know it's old. It has outlasted its any standard, any actuary standard of its use, and we need to do something about it. Well, the way that the land lies and all these other factors involved, we don't have a lot of options. We're working with what we have. And so we're approaching you saying, this is what we can do, this is what we've tried to do, and we're asking you, since we meet these standards, since under the code we meet the hardship requirement, we're asking you to give a little here. I do understand your frustration. I felt it myself.
Well, the other aspect that we asked to consider the last time is, have you considered it? Did you approach the people to the left to try to purchase a part of their property and offer them an easement for access?
And I addressed part of that in the narrative that I provided too, that we cannot, it talks about financial feasibility. We model every single store we do. And we're a publicly traded company. I am not kidding when I tell you I have three levels of auditors I have to justify my existence to on a daily basis. There are certain amounts of money I can expend on each site. To do anything more on this site negates my ability to rebuild this site. I can't buy more land. If I have to buy more land, I cannot build on this site. I have to look somewhere else. And then that leaves an empty building that is not necessarily conducive to growth and development in the city of Gilbert or Story County. I mean, these buildings don't necessarily sell right away either. So the best solution would be if we could figure out how to make this site work, build the new store to meet the needs of the community. We know the need exists because that store does a good business, and we're looking to remodel that and rebuild that.
I'll say this just because you offered the aspect that you were on another board of adjustments. And so I can appreciate certainly what you're saying. I can appreciate that what you're doing and why you're asking it. It's not there. But I think as a board of adjustments member, you have to also appreciate is we're not here about economic development. We're here about land use.
I understand.
That's an argument that needs to be made at an entirely different venue than here. So we're not here to make decisions about, well, this is good for the county. You know, we're here to determine whether this is applicable to the land use development criteria that we have to do. I mean, our hands are tied, as you know, if you've had to go through these.
Right, things. Right. And I would refer you back to my narrative, because I give you everything you need in that narrative. And do let me apologize for the couple of typos I now realize I left in there. But it gives you everything you need to truly address the issue of whether or not this is a hardship. And we go back to the character and uniqueness of the land and whether or not it changes the character of the neighborhood or whether it does anything that impacts the surrounding area in a negative fashion. And I think I answer those questions for you fairly thoroughly without it being truly a legal brief and exhaustion. But basically tells you why I think you can vote favorably for Casey's and why you should vary on the ordinance here. It would benefit the community. And when it benefits the community, it can be a good thing for all. Casey's has been there and owned that store. First of all, it's a franchise store for a period. I spell that out for you, too. And then we've owned that store, I think, since 2000. It's not like we're coming to an area and buying property and then asking you to vary something. We've already been there. We know what that store is going to do. We know how it impacts the community. We know what the traffic's going to be like. We're just asking you to help us in updating that store and updating that location to better meet the needs of the community, because we know that asset's going to not be viable much longer. But to better help meet the needs of the community, to vary the ordinance that prohibits us from doing the safest design. And I think I give you the reasons in that narrative that basically lay out how you can justify doing that. So another thinking like a Board of Adjustment member trying to help you out with that hardship issue.
Argument that you're making, and I think that you're making a very good argument on behalf of your clients, but I still find myself saying, do we really establish unnecessary hardship here if, as you say, I mean, Casey's came into this and basically has owned this store since 2000 and must be making a reasonable return to have operated it for the past like 14 years, right? And I think really what the issue comes down to, I mean, when I look at it is, the regulations don't really, you want to expand your store or you want to update your store, right?
Right.
And in updating the store, one of the deficiencies under the current layout is we just don't have enough parking, right? And that creates a big problem for us in, you know, having a new store. But I don't know that I can necessarily square the idea that your update and the required parking, you know, that you have to have a variance in order to make a reasonable return on this particular investment. I mean, that's just, and
right,
I'm
right.
Happy to have you respond to that.
And I don't know that the two are as closely linked as what you have them there. The store needs to be updated, period. It's not a viable asset for too much longer. To update it on that site, we cannot do what we need to do to meet the needs of the community. Okay? That's a different calculus than how profitable the store is. Okay? We have to have so many spaces of parking. We already know that because that store already has a parking issue. So as we're redoing this store and updating this store, we're trying to take into account the issues we know already exist, and one of them is parking. One of the other ones is we know that it underserves the community because we have people turning away from that store because they can't get in to get their needs met because the parking is an issue. So we know that we underserve that location already. So I see what you're saying, and I see how you're linking the two. I don't know that they're necessarily linked to that degree. If the store was not profitable, we would not consider rebuilding it, period. That's the end of that calculus. Then we look at how does this apply to this location, how do we solve the problems that already exist in the way that Casey's can continue to run a profitable store and it meets the needs of the community. That asset is very old, and it will not be viable for much longer. And one of the issues that we're going to have fairly quickly here is issues with ADA compliance and those types of things. So that store is just old. It needs updates in bathrooms. It needs updates in access. It needs lots of updates. And we cannot do those updates in that facility. We have to redo the entire facility. We have to put a new store in. Does that address your concern?
I'm not so sure that there isn't a solution that maybe you don't want to consider, like buying additional land or maybe having a less desirable to Casey's design. I mean, I get that. I get that you recognize that we've got a problem with the current parking and that it's underserving, like, your population, right? But that also is not really a factor for our consideration, I don't think. I mean, I get that you want to have a store that, you know, better serves your community and have enough parking and all that stuff, but I'm not sure that that really plays into our analysis of the factors here.
I think it does. And I think it does, not only because we can get through the hardship analysis, but one of the other things that you have to look at is, does it negatively impact the surrounding community, or is it an asset to to the surrounding community. And I think that's the side of the argument that I'm trying to put forward, is we've met the hardship discussion in the narrative, in my opinion. The next step onto that is this a good thing for the surrounding community and for the people that this would service? And I think what I'm trying to convey to you is, yes, it is. It helps to meet their needs that already exist, that we know we're underserving, and we know there are parking issues. So by not doing something, we're failing to meet those needs and address those issues. And let me also tell you that we have looked at more than just those four options. At my directive, I had our CAD people do some incredibly strange and creative things, and they looked at me like I had been to happy hour before happy hour, but they did it, and none of them worked. And there are the main issue with all of them was turning radiuses and safety. That's the main issue. The four that you have are actually the most viable four. And the three that are 2, 3, and 4 still have significant issues. One is really the only one that allows us to properly address the safety concerns, properly address the turning radiuses that are necessary for the delivery trucks and for other types of larger vehicles that would frequent the store, and addresses all the things that we're concerned about with parking and servicing the community.
Option 2 is really the only one that meets our requirements, but the issue after that is safety concerns. It says something about ADA access is a concern for this layout as well.
Correct.
Paul
may need to speak to that. So.
ADA concerns are, it's mandated that it be convenient and the closest space to access the store at the door location. Mm-hmm. So that store, that door location, we would have to park on the south end, which then exceeds that, what they would call, comfortable distance. We used to put our accessible spaces around the corner. That was deemed a violation and an older standard. So now it has to be the closest, most convenient route to get to the door. I do not know how I could build a ramp in front of my door and keep my curb spacing for drainage purposes up front. My ramp would actually have to go into that drivable aisle in option 2 to make it work. That's where it fails on that level. I actually didn't catch that one. That came from the Linden group. So.
And looking at that, I can see the ambulatory distance is just too far under the ADA. Other questions that I could address for you?
I think we understand your position as you go through and why you're doing what you're doing as you go through it. Ryan, Kate, a question for staff. The last time that we met, what comment did we receive from the neighbors?
From
the neighbors of any kind?
The only people, again, we put those development signs out there that more or less the development's proposed at this site. We've had various people who drive by that on a daily basis just call and ask what's going on. We explain Casey's is looking at, you know.
Didn't we have a couple from across the road to the north?
Yeah, you're talking at the last meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, at the last meeting we did have. And again, this was nearly 3 months ago now, but I do remember one couple that was along 170th Street to the east of Highway 69 that came in and I believe did not support it, if I recall, just based off the fact that the lighting, trespass, and stuff like that, which is something that we would deal with the applicant when we get to the actual zoning permit on the thing, if we get that far. It's probably in the minutes, I would assume, and I think they were the only ones that showed up. I can't recall anybody else that did. I believe so, right? I looked at Kristen on that because she's the one that sends it out, but yeah.
The options you've looked at, and I've listened to the back and forth and that sort of thing, have you explored a completely different location?
Yes. It would be, that was not the favorable approach, and we have not located another location that would be an alternative. Whenever we approach a community knowing that we need to do something with an existing asset or some community we want to go into, we keep those avenues open. I do know that the decision was that we wanted to rebuild this same site for a number of reasons.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone from the public who would wish to speak to this one this evening? Okay. Then we will close and ask for no other comments unless specifically requested from some of the participants as we go down through this. Okay. Ryan has indicated that because they intend to revise item 19 on the findings of facts to clarify along with some dates and everything. Is there anything other than 19, right, that...
Yeah, as I mentioned, we'll revise... Well, number 19 will be revised to reflect that those dates were the notifications that were sent for the May hearing. It was in May, right? I'm trying to go back in my mind. The last time we met was May, yeah, because it was for June. That was canceled, yeah. So May. Okay, I just wanted to get that straight. So those... Number 19 will be reflected to show that those dates reflected the May hearing. Everything else will remain the same, and then we'll add a number 22 that reflects the legal notifications that were published and the SPOs that were sent out to surrounding property owners regarding this hearing.
So really nothing of substance. We're merely aligning dates.
Yep, but there will be. It's your draft up there, and we just wanted to let you know that there will be an additional...
Without the findings of facts and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments with the adjustments Ryan has outlined.
Or Charlie.
Or excuse me, Charlie.
I did that too. My apologies.
It's all right. It happens all the time. I don't take offense.
Second.
I'm going to do that again. I'm not going to do that again this evening. Sorry.
You think his name is a little
as they know
okay. We've got a motion and a second to adopt the findings of facts and the staff report as revised by comments from Charlie for some dates and coordination as presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Gill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Steelmeyer?
Next one that we have is the adopt the decision that's in there, which under that item we have three items to consider. One is the finding of a necessary hardship and that the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone, that the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances and not due to general conditions in the neighborhood, which may reflect on reasonableness of the ordinance itself. Or three, the use of be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. The second item is granting the variance will not be contrary to public interest. And the third is that the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan are protected. I suspect we're hung up on the same one that we typically always are, which is A1, which is that the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone. But the purpose isn't changing here, which is something that's a little bit different. And so I guess we've got to determine whether the requirements for the setback are an unreasonable hardship in this case. Conversation on that? Because I believe the other criteria essentially are met out of anything that we have talked about at least so far.
was going to argue with you.
No.
Victoria, I think I understand your concerns.
Do you think you can get anywhere close to the finding of an unnecessary hardship?
I will confess to you that I would kind of like to try and get close to that finding. I don't think that granting a variance would be contrary to the public interest. I think we can deal with the lighting issues we talked about before. I think that's fine. I think this is a, I mean, I would understand why Casey's would want to have a store in this location. It's a great spot. You know, it's at a good corner, and it really is a great visible spot. The reasonable return argument is a tough one for me, I will confess. I think I understand where Casey's is coming from with respect to this, and that is that the store as it is such that at some point in the future it's not going to yield a reasonable return, and it's maybe close to that point, at least at the present time. With all that said, I also recognize, I think like you did, David, that, I mean, you know, it seems to me there are some other alternatives to Casey's. They are probably not desirable alternatives, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I typically come down on these things, and where my skepticism comes from is when somebody comes in and says, I want to build what I want to build. So, you know, I turn around and all my company does is build three-bedroom ranch homes, this and this and this. Unfortunately, it won't fit on your lot, but that's still what I want to do. And whether that makes it an appropriate land use or not, that's where I always draw up short on this, is that people coming in and say, we want to build what we want to build. I understand they have good reasons for it because we like it, we've done it 100 times, and everything else like that. Then I get my reservation about, then tell me again why we need to change our land use development plan to match your standard design, because that's what you want to build. That's where I always have a bit of a hard time. I do not deny the specifics of this particular site, that this isn't probably the best fit for this site. I have no qualms with that at all. This is more at the philosophical level of the degree to which our land use regulations are there to be, I don't know, twisted or compromised continually by people who want to go well on bill. I don't think that's what the charge we were put here for.
But then it comes down to the land use regulations. Is the request involved benefiting people in the area? And by blocking the land use regulations, are we falling into the spirit of what we set out?
Well, only to my comments from, while I agree that this may be economically beneficial, we haven't been given the latitude to make that a criteria.
I would understand that too, but I also know if you're a person in that area, you might miss that.
What?
Under what circumstances do we ever find? It's been a while since we've been here. Do we ever find that some of these criteria are not applicable? I mean, when does that ever happen? Charlie?
I'll look back to Leanne a little bit on this one, but my understanding on the few times that has happened is that there's always been an existing building that's in place and they're building an addition onto that building, for example, where the existing building currently does not meet setbacks because it was a building that was built, for example, in the 1930s before we had zoning regulations. They want to build an addition onto that building and they can't meet setback because of the history of how it came about. And in those cases, I believe those are the times that, and I'm just looking
but
back
at the often, yeah, but we're not going to increase the nonconformance.
Yeah. I don't think that necessarily relates to this situation. The only thing I think I would point out, and I have to go back and look at the site plan to where that existing building is. But again, our ordinance is always leans back to the opinion that, you know, if you're building something new, if you're removing a nonconformity, you should be building it so it is conforming with regulations. I know that existing gas station, looking at this, might be pretty close to, when I take that back now that I see it, it looks like the existing gas station does fall within the required setbacks based off how they have it on their site plan here, so I'm not sure that's an issue. I was thinking that if it was currently not meeting setbacks, that you know, you might be able to correlate the two, but again, new structure, so it's somewhat different. It's not an addition.
I mean, Charlie, from a, this is probably oversimplistic, but if a tornado came through tonight and wiped out Casey's, would we let them rebuild?
In its exact location? How it is right now? You're saying...
Compliant, the answer is yes, but if we had a,
yeah.
If we basically had a storm demolished site, would we let them come in with a 5-foot setback?
No, they'd have to do exactly what they're doing right now. Yeah, that wouldn't... The circumstances that would be coming forth don't really play into that, yeah, so...
That's my hang-up in that we're deciding, you know, if this was a storm damage, more than 50% damage, and they wanted to rebuild, and they wanted to rebuild it in a manner that was doing that, we would say no, we'd have to say no. And yet, they're doing it voluntarily, and so maybe we ought to say yes.
Well, again, though, but if, go back to your example, if a tornado would come through and they would come to us within the next week and say, okay, we're ready to rebuild, we want to rebuild this, but we only want a 5-foot setback. The existing building, I believe, looking again at their site plan, the existing building was set back 20 feet. And again, that's according to their site plan. I've never gone out there and measured it, so I don't know if that's fact. But anyways, if they're asking for a lesser setback from that, then we at staff level would have to say no. If they submitted a zoning permit, we deny it, but you know, we could be upfront with them and say no, that does not meet setback. The only way you could get that plan is to get a variance, for example, or to amend the regulations to fit what they want to do. But you know, there's a few options in there. But nonetheless, it's nothing that we could do from an administrative standpoint. The two points of theft when we first reviewed this was, why could we not have another layout that would meet within the setbacks? And two was the way that this has progressed when you look through the findings of facts is there is a parcel of land that I'm going to go back to the findings of facts so I can kind of wade my through it here. There is a parcel of land that Casey's owned last year. It's a 0.46 acre piece of land where the actual gas station and canopy sit right now. That was purchased on August 3rd of 2001, and that was purchased from Risco LC. Just this last January, February, it was late January, early February, they purchased the remaining 1.09 acres of land, which had that office building and the old Suburban restaurant on it. They purchased that, again, from Risco LC. And the price I think we had in here, because that is public knowledge, it is located on our assessor's website, but they purchased that for a sale price of $330,000. The land to the west is also owned by Risco LC, and based off of their site plan on here, I was just looking at this previously, that there is approximately about 40 feet between where their proposed rear portion of the building is and the storage buildings on that land. So our question was, with that 40 feet of barren land there, is it possible to purchase the additional land that you would need to meet setback with this layout? And that was our two questions. Again, additional layouts are, could you purchase the additional piece of ground there to help you meet setback? And that was kind of where they came back and have made the arguments this evening towards those.
Individual wouldn't violate his setbacks because he's on the side.
Yep, the side setbacks, the way our commercial district's set up is we have a zero lot line pretty much on side setbacks, and that's to encourage adjoining buildings on multiple properties, but we do have front and rear setbacks. and from a staff standpoint, being your staff, going through this analysis of legal principles, I think we've covered on most of what I've discussed here, maybe not in great detail, but when you go through this decision portion to step 2 of 3 in the variance process, you would move to adopt the decision based off the verbiage that is in there. And then when you get to the order, that's where you choose to approve or deny. So if there's anything additional that you think should be added into the analysis of that decision, but more so than what the staff report included, it would be the time prior to the motion to add some stuff, and staff will make those revisions.
Sure. Question for you. Have you approached Frisco LLC to even purchase or even try to purchase that beside it, or is that has not even been approached?
I have to limit what I can tell you here. Because I'm an attorney and Casey's is my client, I can tell you that discussions have been had, and they were not fruitful. Does that answer your question enough? It is not an option for Casey's at this time to purchase that property. It's not available to us.
Okay, but at least they were the discussions. The discussions
were had. Yes, discussions were had.
I think we can come to a resolution. From the planning zone?
This doesn't go to Planning and Zoning Commission. Variances come straight to the Board of Adjustment, yep.
I guess the situation is I'm on the fence. I understand the situation you're in. You're wanting to expand the store. I understand the safety aspects of it. We kick that back and forth. But at the same time, we do have the requirements here, and since some of that land has been recently bought, there's a side of me that says that should continue to be explored or should have been considered when you purchased that other piece. Having said that, though, I'm also, though I know economic development is not our part, that's a good location, and I feel that's an asset for that area. So that's why I'm on the fence.
You know, and I tend to agree with you. We are caught between the legalistic and the, if you want to call it, the common sense aspect of it. It's, you know, but if we deny this variance, there are indeed plans where Casey's could stay there. It'd be their choice whether to be there or not. You know, we just have the thing of on a hardship cannot yield a reasonable return. Well, they're establishing what the reasonable return is. It's not that there can't be a return there, and so it's not that they can't have a store there. They've demonstrated that they can have a store there. So it's not that they're kicking that out, but they'd like a little more store than what our current regs would like to have.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. So I don't view this as being just Casey's, no Casey's. It's just kind of like this aspect about reasonable return, building it, we want to build it as far as we want to build it, and going through that. So
Do I think having cases on that corner is reasonable?
Yes. I don't question that.
Yeah. Same here.
Whatsoever. That's what I'm taught. I don't know if that helps you at all.
Well, it probably helps me, but, I mean, it doesn't give me the outcome that I think I would like to see, to be quite honest with you. I don't think that they meet the legal principles necessary to grant the variance. I mean, in terms of our discussions today, I personally would be willing to, I guess, place this on the table for additional time if it would be helpful to them with their negotiations in terms of looking for additional land. But and I do appreciate, you know, I appreciate the difficulties here, and I agree with you that it's an asset to the community, and yes, I would love to find a way to make it work, but I don't think that we meet the legal principles here. And I think Steve is, I mean, you put your finger on that's the dilemma, right?
And is there some crack or crevice here we're not uncovering? Okay. Thank you. So then it's time to make consideration on the decision. I don't think we're going to get any more enlightened on this than what we currently are.
Okay, so Charlie tells us to move to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Surrey County Board of Adjustment, and I will do so.
Second.
A motion is second to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report prepared and presented to the Surrey County Board of Adjustments. Additional conversation, the only thing I'd like to put into that seems to be leading us down to the way then if we get to the request that we're willing to put criteria on there for which it would be acceptable. That's where that would seem to be heading. Are we?
Real quick, so when you're saying that you're adopting the decision again, the analysis of the legal principles, you're saying that there's an argument made in there either one way or the other for the approval or denial to move forward. So you're just adopting the language that is built in the analysis of the legal principles.
Adopt the decision, but in the order portion,
that's where you say you either approve or deny.
That's correct.
But you have to have the arguments made in the analysis of the legal principles to either approve or deny it.
Okay. So we've got a motion then to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report, prepare for or present. Motion and second.
Discussion. Run that by me again that you just said.
Okay, so the analysis of the legal principles, what you're doing is you're formulating your decision, more or less, that you're saying that, you know, here are the arguments and the analysis of those three legal principles, one of which has the other three, so the five that are all together in there. But the analysis that's in there, that's your argument that you're going to make to decide on the order. Yeah. You wouldn't want to deny the decision because what you're saying if you deny the decision is that you're denying your analysis of legal principles, which pretty much...
That's what I thought you were saying, but I just wanted to be clear before I...
Any other discussion?
Okay. Then we've got a motion and a second to adopt the decision as outlined in the staff report, prepared and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment. Roll, please.
Stillmeyer? McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Come to the final order.
Move to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR-0314 as discussed by the Board of Adjustment in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment. Funding bills, the legal principles have not been satisfied.
We have a motion to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR-03-14 as discussed by the Board of Adjustments and in the staff report prepared for presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment finding that all legal principles have not been satisfied. Any other discussion? Okay. Roll then.
Miller?
Aye.
Gilmeyer?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Scarlett?
We will then move on to new business. The first item that we have in this evening is a conditional use permit, CUP 07-14, Pyramid Network Services. This was one that was not, the details weren't available on the agenda. I couldn't get them.
I couldn't open it up on the agenda either.
All of
well, our apologies. I will try to go through in as much detail as I can then for your behalf. This is a conditional use permit for a cell tower. Just some basic property information. Property owner is the Lorne R. Simpson Trust. Is generally located at the southeast corner of the intersection of Interstate 35 and Highway 30. About 7.5 acres, currently zoned commercial, light industrial. It's designated on the Ames River Fringe Plan as highway-oriented commercial, and as such is located within 2 miles of the city of Ames. This is a general location map that we sent out for notice of tonight's meeting, as well as for the Planning and Zoning Commission. It is in the yellow hatch, is the property under consideration. Everything in orange is those properties that did receive notice of tonight's meeting. Just some quick site shots for you. This is looking from that frontage road towards the west, 244th Street towards the west. You see the building in blue. To the rear is where the proposed communications tower would be located. This is then on that frontage road, though further west, looking towards the east. Again, the building in blue. And where that red pickup truck is in the rear is the general location, the rear of the building. Again, another same view, but a little bit further east, moving further east. Again, same location, but looking more due east with the building towards your right or to the south. And then this is along the Highway 30. And then this last one is looking straight due south along Highway 30. And this last one is on the drive on Cornerstone Church, which would be to the north of the site, looking towards the southeast. Again, it is for construction of a communications tower, a monopole design, and associated equipment. It would be a 150-foot high tower with a 12-foot by 30-foot shelter within the lease area. That lease area is approximately 35 feet by 75 feet. We do allow commercial communication towers in the CLI, Commercial Light Industrial District, through the conditional use permit. We do have established setbacks as such, and this does meet those established setbacks. It's approximately 440 plus or minus feet from the north property line and a little under 200 feet to the west property line. And those properties to the south and west are both zoned commercial, light, industrial, and then to the east it's agricultural A1, and it is used for row crop. Findings of facts were outlined in the staff report, but you probably weren't able to review them, so I will just quickly review them. They are also in the draft decision and order that is before you. April 11th of this year, we did receive the development application and submittal requirements. I was assigned case number. I'm going to summarize these two. Assigned case number CUP 07-14 and placed on the agenda for the May 5th, 2014 Planning and Zoning Commission. As the board well knows and for the members of the public, conditional use permits go first to the Planning and Zoning Commission, who acts as a recommending body to you all, the ultimate decision makers on conditional use permits. Property is zoned commercial, light industrial. It's classified through by the county assessor as industrial for assessment purposes. There is an existing building that you did see in the site shot. Property is designated highway-oriented commercial in the Ames River Fringe Plan. Planning and Zoning Commission reviewed the permit, conditional use permit on May 5th and did recommend approval to you all. And then we did mail surrounding property owner notifications out on June 25th, 2014, and published the required legal notifications in all three official newspapers on June 26th. These are the applicable regulations defined in the Story County Code of Ordinances, specifically Chapter 90. As the board knows, there are six standards for approval that must be satisfied: compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, and environmental protection. The staff report does provide an analysis of the applicant's conformance to these standards, and we do find that it does meet the standards or may through some conditions of approval. The staff report did contain an analysis that tried to demonstrate what the site would look like, and Lynn's probably the only one that was able to see that. But if you look at the decision and order on the bottom of the page two, we tried to just demonstrate what that monopole tower would look like and how visible, or another way to say it, not visible or noticeable it would be as you're traveling on Highway 30, either east or west. Standards for approval continue with building on the development criteria. Five additional criteria: not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare, impair adequate supply of light and air, unduly increase congestion in roads or hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property, and last, not be in accord with the intent, purpose, and spirit of the land development regulations of county development plan. As outlined in the staff report, adherence to these standards was achieved as well. In addition, specifically for communications towers as well as other types of uses, the communications towers in this particular case, Table 90.1 establishes supplemental standards for various conditional uses. And in this case, all those standards will be satisfied either as is presented or with some conditions of approval, and I'll address those shortly. Burden of persuasion with conditional use permits does lie with the applicant. And Planning and Zoning Commission, again, on May 5th, did review the conditional use permit and recommend approval to the Board of Adjustment with four conditions. One, that if the commission determines that the existing building vegetation on the site provides adequate screening and meets the intention of Section 4.E, subsection 2, they did and recommended that section is complied with. That's what requires fencing and screening around the base and perimeter of a communications tower. In this particular case, that existing building would suffice as a screening. Number two, the fencing details proposed indicated strands of barbed wire extending around the proposed chain link fence, or it should be above the proposed chain link fence. That does mean that the proposed enclosure exceeds 8 foot high, which is our maximum height. The commission was okay with that and recommended approval with that type of modification. The commission did also note that equipment enclosure detail shows an exterior light with photocell. Did, through their condition approval, stress that light source, if rated more than 1,800 lumens, needed to be shielded in a manner so it's downward directed in fashion. And then did address the FAA determination at the time the staff report was being prepared. I know the applicant will address the resolution that's been achieved on this matter. So with that, you have four alternatives. One, you may conditionally approve the conditional use permit. In essence, you'd be accepting the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation or amending it. Approve as put forth without conditions. You may deny it. And lastly, you may table it for the review, and I will be glad to answer any questions.
The decision order that we have here only has three criteria on it. It doesn't have the FAA. Is that
right? That's been resolved. I'll let the applicant address that.
Okay. That was what
yes,
I wanted.
Thank you.
Okay. Any comments from the public? at all? Okay.
And we did not post a notification sign on the site, just given the volume of traffic that goes, or the velocity at which traffic is passing by the intersection with 35 and 30, and the fact it's set back with that frontage road. We didn't think, actually, the sign is such size it would not achieve notification as intended.
Who speaks for the applicant? Would you approach the podium, please? We appreciate it.
Good evening, Board. My name is Joe Coyle. I'm with Pyramid Network Services, here to represent the tower owner, who is the FBA Communications. My address is 312 East 70th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, 64113. I was here back in May in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission. As Ms. Harder let you all know tonight, they did recommend to approve. I was actually commended for my conditional use permit application. It's on the record. I need to get a copy of that. But basically, in a nutshell, we did meet all of the requirements. You do have supplemental tower regulations in Story County. My application addressed all of those things. The commission basically conditionally approved based on those four items.
As the applicant, do you have any qualms with meeting those three criteria?
No. As far as the landscaping requirement, we did not propose any trees or bushes around that shelter because it is hidden from the right-of-way by that large building. It abuts the building, the property to the south. There's not a residence there, so we would hope that landscaping wouldn't be needed at this site, but we can certainly do that. As far as the fencing goes, we can deal with the 8-foot height restriction. The barbed wire isn't necessarily a requirement. That's based on the location of the site, typically. So whether there's a safety concern of vandals or something, someone getting in the shelter. So we could either bring that fence down, have the barbed wire, or we can cut the barbed wire out to keep it at your 8-foot. What they really wanted to see was the FAA determination, which did come in since I was here last, and it's basically a letter that I forwarded to Ms. Harder, one page from the FAA. It's called a determination of no hazard. So that's basically the FAA saying that we're good to go with the tower height there at 150 feet. That's in a nutshell. I would just ask that you vote tonight. Follow the commission's recommendation to go ahead and pass and approve the conditional use permit. Of course, if you have any more questions, I did get some questions that evening from the commission that were answered, things about the landscaping and things of that nature. One of the biggest questions, of course, with a new tower is, did we explore co-location opportunities, which we did. The nearest tower to the proposed site is 1 mile northeast, and that is actually Verizon would be the first tenant on this tower, I should mention. The nearest tower, Verizon is already on that tower. So what we're building here is a capacity site to actually boost the capacity of that existing tower that's a mile away. So we obviously can't locate on that tower where Verizon's already there. There were three other towers within a 2 mile radius. But with these capacity sites, the network engineers have a very small search area, and all three of those other towers, unfortunately, fell outside of the search area. The final thing I would say is that the owner of this tower, SBA Communications, is in the business of owning towers. They're the third largest tower owner in the country, behind American Tower and Crown Castle. So what they do, their business plan is to market these towers once they build them. the tower is designed, it can hold at least two or three more co-locators. So sometimes the carriers aren't too friendly with each other when they're approached to put another carrier up on their tower. That's not their priority. They're more interested in taking care of their own business rather than trying to help a competitor necessarily. But with SBA, they do market their towers to all the carriers and try to get as many people up on the tower as possible. So I think that would be it. So any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Anyone from the public that wishes to speak to this one? Okay. And we'll close for deliberation. Fairly brief on this one. Do we have anything on the findings of facts? Any concerns? Okay.
Move to adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
I did.
Okay.
That's okay.
We've got a motion and a second to adopt the findings of fact and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Miller.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Kielmeyer.
Okay, the decision is Charlie, so he's not even here to recognize. So aptly put together for us, merely means that we are agreeing with these criteria and going down through it. It appears that this particular installation is essentially what I call a typical installation of any others. There's been nothing unique brought to our attention. So I have a motion to adopt.
The business about the condition of approval, the first one where it says if the board site provides adequate screening and meets.
Want me to address that now or when we get to the order? I can do it.
Let's get past this. I think we'll go to the order because that's when we would decide if we want to craft that or.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. Okay.
I move to adopt the decision regarding the developmental criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Motion and a second to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment. Roll, please.
Hillmeyer. McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Now we come to the order, and I think this would be a great time to have Ms. Harder address the conversations that have perhaps come around criteria one.
That requirement, Amanda, read up for the record, states the lowest 6 feet of the tower facility shall be visually screened by trees, large shrubs, solid walls, buildings, solid fencing, and or any combination thereof from all public right-of-ways and adjoining planned and or existing residential land uses. I do believe there was probably a word left off in the way that was worded, but basically you're just saying you determine that as set forth in the application, it meets the intention of Section 4.8.2, that no additional screening is required.
Okay.
You can say if the board determines that existing building vegetation on the site provides adequate screening and meets the intention of...
What you just indicated is that there needed to be screening of some type. Is that right?
Right. Well, there's two issues. There's one, the fence height, but then whether or not that does provide adequate screening. In the past, you've had, this is the first instance that you've had a cell tower that's in commercial zone property that already has existing buildings and landscaping in place. You've had a vacant site where they've been able to place shrubbery around the lower 6 feet to help establish visual screening. In my opinion, that's already established in the site. You just simply need to say existing landscaping and vegetation, or existing landscaping and buildings achieve the requirements of 4.E.2.
I see why Victoria had the problem, because it's this if statement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seems to leave it.
Open. I think that's me just wanting to be vague. Whether or not I'll
be here. I'd be willing to say if the staff agrees. I mean, that's not a problem. But the staff, the applicant says they're going to do.
here's what I'm trying to align is the applicant says they don't plan on doing anything, and yet I hear you saying that something needs to be done.
Something needs to be done by the Board of Adjustment to say that as established in the application materials and proposed, it meets the intention of 4.8.2.
After telling us is really nothing more needs to be done.
Right.
But they want us to sort of bless that, right?
Yeah. Can we bless that by eliminating criteria one?
Condition approval one, yeah, you can.
At that point in time, then
I think the record will stand as it is that you've indicated that 4.8.2 is established through existing vegetation and landscaping.
Therefore, criteria one is not required. I just don't want somebody to interpret it later, you know, on down the road. So I think resolving that in some manner at least gets that question mark off the table.
Okay.
With that in mind, does someone wish to craft a recommendation?
Well, I will just point out for the board, too, the applicant did just note that they may be able to meet the maximum fence height. So in essence, that number two would not be necessary, condition number two, where you're basically allowing them to exceed the maximum fence height. Right. Based on
that, then they have to meet the max.
Right.
Yeah, based on what the applicant just said. Is that correct? Okay. So it just leaves you with number three, which would become number one.
Okay. So I move that we approve the conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant in CC0714, discussed by the zoning BOA. The Board of Adjustment and the staff report prepared for and presented to the Board of Adjustment, finding that all standards of approval will be satisfied with the following condition of approval. What we have is number three. The equipment enclosure detail shows an exterior light with photocell. This light source, if rated at more than 1,800 lumens, will need to be shielded in a manner so the light is directed in a downward fashion.
Second.
So, we've got a motion to approve the conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant in case number CUP07-14, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment and in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, finding that all standards of approval will be satisfied with the single condition that the equipment enclosure detail shows an exterior light with a photocell. This light source, if rated more than 1,800 lumens, will need to be shielded in a manner so that light is directed in a downward fashion. Roll, please.
Harlitz?
Aye.
Steelmeyer? Aye. McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Okay.
And stop. Next item this evening is a variance, and this is the Vetter Equipment Variance, VAR04-14.
Wait. Oh, yeah, you're right. I have them in here wrong.
Okay. So we are at VAR 04-14.
Carly, put better in here. Give me 1 minute to try and find it. Okay. Should I wait or go ahead? I can start.
I think you can start on the findings of the fact.
This is case number VAR04-14. We've called it the Vetter Equipment Variance Request. Just some property information for the board. Property owner is Better Equipment. The general property location is located at the corner of U.S. Highway 30 and 590th, the northwest corner. Size of the parcel is about 31.65 acres net. Again, we have a commercial light industrial zone property, and this is designated on county development plan as Tier 3 cooperative planning area, and it is within 2 miles of the city of Nevada. This is the property, surrounding property owner map that was sent to those within a quarter mile of the property. Those properties are in red, and then the Vetter site is in the hatched in area in the very middle of the screen. It's kind of a twofold variance request. One is to section 89.02.3, subsection D1, to exceed the maximum cumulative area of all external signs of 300 square feet. And then to section 89.02.3, subsection D2, to exceed the maximum height of 20 feet for one particular sign. Just some quick sight shots. This is looking towards the east along Highway 30, and you see the Vetter building on the left-hand side of the screen. That's in the back. And then this is at the intersection of 590th, on the south side of the intersection of 590th, which is south of Highway 30, a dirt road, looking towards the north. This is an existing sign. And then these are the directional signages. You can see them in black there. This is zoomed in on the general area where the proposed sign is to be located. And then this is looking west along U.S. Highway 30 to the property location. First building you see is the Flexicoil site, and Vetter is to the rear of that. And then this is zooming into that location. Findings of fact were outlined in the staff report. I'm not going to go over these in great detail. I'll answer any questions the board may have. This, as a variance, you've already seen the legal principles when Charlie introduced the Casey's earlier, but again, they're the same standards or legal principles that the Board of Adjustment needs to find adherence to in order to grant a variance. Just some images. The existing signs are those two on the left. It says deliveries. These are part of the maximum cumulative square footage that we add into the mix along with the proposed sign. The proposed sign is that on the right, and that sign itself is of dimensions of 30 by 12, so 360 feet. That by in and of itself exceeds the maximum cumulative size. It is also 30 feet high, and that exceeds the maximum height of 20 feet by 10 feet. So that's the need for the two variance requests, or two full variance. In addition, the applicant, in addition to these two existing signs on the left and the proposed KSIH sign, they'd like to add a Cub Cadet, so that would take it above and beyond even more than what it is right now. Your alternatives are to approve the variance as proposed, and with conditions. You may approve it as proposed. You may deny it. Lastly, you may delay it for more information from staff and the applicant. I abbreviated a little bit in the interest of time with your agenda. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Question for you. You mentioned a Cub Cadet. Are you talking about a sign that says Cub Cadet above it, or are you going to put a real Cub Cadet on top?
The applicant can talk. There's another sign that's proposed.
That's kind of what I thought, but, you know, I thought I would clarify.
Man, my only question is probably definitional, because I haven't gone back to the definitions to make sure on the regs. So we talk about the maximum cumulative area of all external signs. What is the definition in the reg exterior signs? Is it something within so many feet of the roadway, or is there, you know, what criteria makes it part of the cumulative?
Cumulative, it just says any external sign shall count. I'll get that language next. But external sign is defined as means any sign primarily designed, scaled, and or positioned to convey commercial or non-commercial information or messages beyond the bounds of the property on which the sign is located. So in this case, that were there deliveries, it's...
I guess that's my question. I guess the smaller signs that I see here are directional and not as much commercial, and that's why I was trying to find out about your definition.
And directional is, we don't have a category for directional. We took that out a number of years ago, and it's all now external or internal or building signs. It's the three classifications we have.
See my challenge. I mean, I can see a sign by a loading dock that says park here, and that adds into...
It does. But I think it would be important to, again, point out, even if those two signs do not exist, the proposed sign, the case IH, exceeds the cumulative.
I get that, but I'm still trying to put all of them, as we deal with possibilities for resolution, I'm still trying to poke around to find out what definitional criteria do we have. So it sounds like we're fairly vague. There is the term commercial in there on the external definition.
To convey commercial or non-commercial information or messages beyond the bounds of the property on which the sign is located.
And 300 square feet is the maximum amount of any of the signs added together, correct?
Excluding building signs. The regulations take building signs out. So when you're in a commercial light industrial, it's 300 square feet of freestanding signs, essentially.
Right, I guess I'm having, this is where my consternation kicks in. When I deal with larger sites, as you go down through it, let's just say here locally, let's go to Lake and Way Energy or DuPont's out there or anything else like that, they're going to have all kinds of signs that says semi delivers here or drop off there and everything. And if all of these are subtracted from 300 square feet, pretty soon we're going to end up with postage sized signs. I guess this is back to the intent of the rate. I understand the commercial part of it, and I really don't deny that it's probably the fact that the main sign meets that criteria, but I'm worried about these, what I'll call an auxiliary sign, and how those might add up and not meet the intent of what was originally intended by those rates.
So
the large sites are where the real problem is, as I see it. It's not a... So you got one person with a storefront, and you have a requirement for a sign, and I completely get that. But on these large sites where you truly have to direct people just for the safety and, you know, the efficiency of operation and et cetera, that's where I'm going to have my... That's why I asked about the definitions right now.
I did want to also read into the record the definition of cumulative sign area. Means the sum of the area of all signs of a given type on any one lot, parcel, or tract of land. And that's where, like you just said, the limiting factor, what could play in there would be the size of the lot.
Thank you. I wanted to put that in perspective before we got too much further.
Our regulations they don't relate the cumulative sign to the size of the lot necessarily, right? I mean, you could have an enormous lot, but that's not going to change the sign regulation. Okay, yeah.
The only differential we have is in relation to the zone district. And the cumulative area will change based on the zone district. And the greatest cumulative area is indeed in the CLI, the commercial light industrial.
This is as big as it gets. It only goes down from here. That's what it does.
So I wanted to find out. Any other questions for staff?
Mm-hmm. Any comments from the public, Leanne, before
we... And we did post a public notice sign here. I think we had one phone call that I received. Did you get any more? No written comments.
Okay. Who speaks for the applicant this evening?
Good evening, Board. My name is Gary Anderson. I am store manager at Better Equipment at that location. It's 224-91-590th Avenue, Better Equipment. The reason that we have requested the opportunity to create the variance is because of the fact that by contractual obligations with the manufacturers that we represent, we are required to put up signage with regard to our representation to their products. The three principal products that we represent that would probably require signage, and I was in remiss with regard to what I provided Ms. Harger, in that steel chainsaws is another provider of equipment for us. So that would require probably a smaller sign in the neighborhood of probably 3x4, 3x6, something like that. The principal issue, and it was troubling with regard to what we had discussed and what you have already discussed, just to kind of give you an overview, these signs we had made just because of the fact that...
Can you use the pointer so we can stay by the microphone?
I'm sorry. Our entrance is at the south end of the property, and at the south end of the property, that is our principal entrance, and we address service, sales, and parts at that entrance, but all of our deliveries are located on the north entrance, and that is approximately 300 feet past this sign. We do have a considerable amount of semi-traffic that comes in for our major deliveries for our larger equipment, our combines, tractors, and our parts deliveries. So we have made every effort that we can possibly do in the instance of safety to create an atmosphere where we can have the deliveries located and entering the driveway to the north. That way we can address and send all of our parts, sales, and service traffic to the front of the building, and that way it keeps a bottleneck from happening with regard to the front entrance of our building with regard to safety and so forth in that regard. So we did it intentionally in order to be able to try to control the traffic through the lot. The other thing is we understand that the 300 square feet is the principle that we're trying to achieve here, but the other thing that I want to point out is where this sign would be located is setting approximately about, and this is an estimate on my part, probably 15 to 30 feet below what the grade level is for Highway 30, so it will be setting down lower. So in order for us to be able to get maximum exposure, if you want to call it that, to the driving public that passes our business, we wanted to try to be able to utilize that with a 30-foot sign. The Cub Cadet sign, as you had addressed earlier, would be an independent sign, freestanding on its own. If we did put up a steel sign, that would be a freestanding independent sign of its own. They would be separated exponentially across the front of the lot, so we wouldn't become obtrusive by having all of the signs located on top of each other, so to speak. So we would try to spread it out to where the public could see, and without creating an accident, try to discern or determine where we are for that particular product that we represent. Any other questions you may have? I think that pretty well covers it for what I have to say. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Sandra, what you got in mind? Any comments from the public?
Question, if we're looking for the variance, okay, we can grant a variance, but if we're granting it from a 300-square-foot level and from a height level, when we grant this variance, do we set out a specific amount of square-foot level? Do we, you see what I'm saying? How do we word this?
You were saying that, I was also writing down another finding of fact that kind of gets to that. You could add that to that. That would be that the applicant proposes three additional signs in addition to the two existing signs on site. I think that's important to spell out in the findings of fact. If I can, what were the dimensions of the steel chainsaw?
It would be about 3x4 or 3x6.
Okay. What about the Cub Cadet?
Cub Cadet, I think the name means I sent you in the packet, but it was 4x6.
Okay. And what are the two? I forget. What are the two existing signs, where their dimensions are? That gets up, if you take the two existing signs, those are 9 square feet each, say 18 square feet, the steel would be 18 square feet, the Cub Cadet would be 24 square feet, and then the new Case IH 320 square feet, you'd be 380 square feet. So you could, through adding to that, say something, or even in your order ultimately, if you do approve the variance, that not to exceed a 400 square feet total cumulative or something to that. I just threw that out, rounding 380 out.
And we're trying to explore the boundaries of this. So here again, let me take 20 feet. Is that 20 feet from grade?
Height, yeah.
So if a berm were to put up, that doesn't mean
height.
That.
We go from grade.
As soon as it gets above the dirt. No, okay, so you got 20 feet from wherever the dirt stops to go up. Now, if the bottom 10 feet of that sign were not solid, does that count in the 300?
Well, you mean if it's open? Oh,
it was open. Let's say the bottom 10 feet of that particular sign was open.
Before I answer that, I'm going to check the regulations.
Trying to explore the criteria.
Fortunately or unfortunately, we don't really deal with signs on a daily basis. Computation of sign area shall include the combination of the writing, emblem, illustrations, or other display, together with any background material or color forming an integral part of the display, but not including the supporting framework. Right. So in your particular hypothetical situation, if it was all open, we considered it framework, we would not add that to the computation.
I'd really ask the applicant to think about that. And I know that you've got a sign design here, and I know you have a concern about what you said was 15 foot of elevation differences, but it just seems to me that you could design a bermed area, widen the sign a little bit. You might even be able to hang underneath that your Cub Cadet and whatever else like that and be able to meet the 300 at least at that front location. I haven't talked about the directional yet, but it seems to me like you still have some latitude in the design to do something.
We really don't agree.
Sorry. Yeah, you have to.
Case IH mandates to us specific signage requirements with regard to design, and we have a very limited choice of opportunity with regard to the signage opportunities that we have available to us. They have 5 sign vendors that are in North America that provide and come out and do site analysis, and they also come out and do the erection of the sign once that we have been approved in order to be able to do so. So the monument sign that you see here is my only choice. If I don't go with this choice, then I'm restricted to just a pole sign. And the pole sign goes straight up in the air and it looks like a flag. And so the owner of our business, by making a commitment to the community and the money that we've already spent and invested in this building, he's opted to utilize the monument sign opportunity that Case IH is providing and has chosen to go with the monument sign. So I'm really, my hands are tied, or our hands are tied, just because of the restrictions that Case IH, the corporate company, deals to us from that standpoint.
I don't think this is tremendously different than the conversation with Case. And then I know that Case IH has places such as your place of business all over the country with all different kinds of criteria. And so, I suspect this may be the sign of convenience. I don't know that it's the only sign that's available to do this. I mean, that's my point. It's that, again, if somebody wants to build what they want to build, but they may also say, well, but we wouldn't do that in Indiana. We're going to do something totally different over there because they want this. I don't know if there's just one
sign design or two sign designs that Case does all across this country.
I'm sorry, say that again, excuse me?
It just would surprise me if Case has one or two designs and that's all they allow all across the country.
Oh, that's exactly what we've got that we're dealing with. We have a pole sign that is erected and it can go up 30 feet, but it is just a straight flag sign that just says Case IH on it. And, you know, that is, in my opinion and in the owner's opinion, that's an outdated sign. So from that standpoint, he's opted to go this direction and pay the additional money for the sign in order to represent the company and represent the community in the best fashion that we can. The other side of that, too, is with the grade level situation being at Highway 30 and it drops down to some degree, it doesn't really afford us the opportunity to go with a flag type sign in order to be able to promote the business the way we would like to.
Just be aware that if that's the position you want to take, we will take that position as we go into deliberations, because that's about what we're ready to do, is get it to that point. If you say this is take it or leave it, because this is all the company will let it, then we'll deliberate on that basis. If you don't have any flexibility, then we will take that into consideration.
My hands are tied. I'm just the manager of the store from the standpoint. I'm representing both the company and the Case IH dealership.
I just wanted to get that in the record before we go.
Sure.
Because we usually try to find resolutions where we can.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hearing from you that this is kind of a take it or leave it deal. This is what we have to do.
It's take or leave it for me also. I'm afraid that's the situation.
Dave, can I ask just a quick question?
Sure.
The lower four panels, three panels on the design, are those integral to the construction of the sign, or can those be removed? And
I can't answer that. I can check into that to see if that can be removed.
That, in essence, takes those 6 feet off and takes it down to about 180 square feet, which is, I think, the point you were making.
Completely. I was trying to find out. I hope out of a relatively short interaction here that you get the idea that we're trying to work with you.
Oh, no, I certainly agree.
And really our choices here are two. Gosh, I hate tabling things. Okay, if you need time to go back to whoever, I would suggest that you do go back to them and say, look, in this form, this is likely not to go anywhere. And if you need that time, fine, but once we've deliberated and done, it's done. So do you want time, I guess, to try to work this out? I think you've got the gist of what we're talking about and where we think there is some latitude.
Sure, I understand.
If you need time to do that, then we would prefer to table that rather than to close the door today.
Okay, I can agree to that.
So then let's turn around then and consider tabling this so the applicant consider some of the thoughts we've shared with them about trying to get this better into compliance than what we can, because as it's currently there, you're really putting us between more than just a rock and a hard place.
No, I can understand that, but like I said, there's only a certain... The same restrictions happen to Deere dealers, they happen to Chevrolet dealers, the things of that nature. You know, I can't... sometimes, as a manufacturer's representative, you can't dictate what the company comes to you with regard to their requirements.
Well, you may not be authorized to make that decision tonight, but I think you can go back with a message.
Sure.
And then those folks can decide how important that is.
Okay. I can do that.
We're going to table this, but I suggest also, if we get a little better idea on the other two signs you're looking at, you know, so that we've got, we at least get those covered when they come in.
Sure. I can do that. No problem.
Are there any other questions you need from us so that you can do whatever you need to do before?
No. No. I'm very clear with where
you are.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. I did fail to put one thing on alternative number four. If you did delay today, we would ask that you put a submittal deadline for revisions of July 14th and then table this to the August meeting, which would be...
So let me ask the applicant, how much time would you need to come back with an alternate proposal? You know, knowing that we're at July 2nd right now.
I understand. I'll do my best to be able to comply with the July 14th requirement, but I would also appreciate some latitude if I can't get the information from corporate that quickly.
Oh, I mean, if we want to have a different date that says no later than. I mean, we can do a no later than, which at least has an end date. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to get an answer quicker, we can move it quicker. But we do need to put an end date.
Or would you prefer to table it till September 3rd? That way, the deadline could be up till August 13th.
I'm okay with that. It's the kind of
later
a question of
August 13th.
We're in a situation where we're in a timeline to get the sign ordered right now, so I'm up against that timeline also.
Then let's put it this way, so that you know the implications. We'll set this up as being no later than you had an August.
July 14th. Oh, August 13th.
No later than August 13th, but if you can come in earlier than that and make the August meeting date.
It would be July 14th.
Right. So we put an end date. If you meet August, July 14th, we can meet in August. But if you meet August 13th, it would be in September. So the latest date would be that August 13th date.
Got it.
Anything else?
I move we table case number VAR04-14.
So, as I restate that, I want to make sure we have those criteria in there as part of the discussion, that we will table VAR, by motion and second, to table VAR04-14 with the understanding that if the applicant gets their information in by July the, was that the 14th or 13th? We have a 13th and a 14th here.
It's July 14th.
July 14th to be part of the August meeting or August 13th to be part of the September meeting. So
July 13th is a Sunday. So it's July 14th.
14th.
My motion.
Okay, roll please.
Del Meyer. Scarlett.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye. Okay, we will move on now to a conditional use permit, a minor modification for the City of Nevada.
The applicant, property owner, is the City of Nevada. The address on the screen is City Hall. So this is part of the Wellfield site that's located along Interstate 35, south of the intersection with Highway 30. I'll show you some site shots here shortly and general location map. Currently, the property is zoned A1 agricultural and has been since we've initiated zoning in 1958. It is designated agricultural and farm service on the Ames River Fringe Plan, and as such, it is within 2 miles of the City of Ames. This is a general location map that was sent to the surrounding property owners. Those in orange this time are those that received notice of tonight's hearing. The three parcels under consideration or that fall within the boundaries of the conditional use permit are those in the yellow hatched area. This is a request for a minor modification. As the board knows, there are three tiers of modifications to approve conditional use permits that can be processed. One is an insignificant modification that is acted on solely at the administrative staff level. Two is a minor modification that comes right back to the Board of Adjustment. The last level is a major modification, and that in essence is viewed as a whole new application, and that goes to Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment in turn. Staff did determine this to be a minor modification to the original conditional use permit, CUP 03-89. It's to allow for four new improvements: construction of a new submersible well with pitless unit below grade concrete vault, a new water main, extension of a gravel access road, and installation of a 60-foot high pole for communications equipment. Some site shots. This is looking from the location improvements. So Interstate 35 is basically due west behind my back. I'm looking towards the east.
I need the pointer.
And I am going to apologize. I don't remember the well number to the back. Is that 5? Well number 5 is back here, one of the existing wells. The stakes you see there going in the mound of dirt running east to west is the location of the proposed access road. This is the location of the well and then the location for the other improvements behind. You'll see it close up next. This is where it's already been dug out for those improvements. Another shot. And then another one just showing the elevation. This is, again, I showed you the earlier shot going east. This is another location, but I'm right in the center line of that access road looking east. You can, I don't know if you can see the stakes in the middle with the pink flags running that direction. And then this is directly opposite, looking west. You can see Interstate 35 in the background. And then this is the access road. And the improvements would be at the terminus of the access road. Yeah.
Let me just call this cutting to the chase. This well field's been developed now over the last
1989 is when the first conditional use permit was issued.
Okay. So this is not the first minor modification then, because we've added other wells to the same area. Does this particular request have any substantial differences from the other minor modifications? I kind of wanted to draw that distinction. So we've already approved other minor modifications who are essentially the same as this particular one, other than the calendar is moved.
With two exceptions. One, there is some regulated identified wetland, but that's a greater issue beyond Story County. But the second one is, since the last modification was approved, the digital or the flood insurance rate maps have been amended, and this is now in the floodplain. So it does trigger the requirements for a floodplain development permit through our office.
As long as we take care of that. You see, I'm trying to focus on the differences
since
we've been at this before.
Yep. I'm not going to repeat the findings of facts. Those are spelled out, and this is just basically chronology of events of the site and how it's developed out, as Dave just said. This is the site plan that was submitted. It's actually, at least on my screen, kind of difficult to see. But this was the existing well that I noted. These are other existing wells down here. This is the location of the proposed well. And then the line running east to west or up and down on the screen is the access road. And then this, where the circle just came up, this is the location where the 60-foot communications system would go, or tower would go, and that would, is it SCADA? SCADA? SCADA would be able to enhance the communications between the well field and then the water plant on the outside of Nevada, within city limits of Nevada. This is as close in of the location of the proposed wellhead. And again, I've already mentioned the types of modifications. Modifications have to meet the same standards for approval as conditional use permits. I've been through this already once tonight. I won't repeat those. And there are no, and again, the burden of persuasion does lie on the applicant. There are no supplemental standards for approval for wells and these types of uses. They just meet the general standards as outlined in Chapter 90. And then I didn't, again, note that the floodplain management program, the road, the well, access road, and communications tower are all in the map floodplain. As such, we do have to act on a floodplain development permit. The materials were submitted. Staff, however, will not act on that floodplain permit until two things happen. One, that we receive notice that the DNR has finalized their floodplain development permit, and two, the Board of Adjustment has acted positively on the proposed land use.
We don't have any criteria with you, so that is...
That is an administratively approved permit by me.
No.
You do have these three alternatives. Approve the minor modification as proposed, deny as proposed, or remand it with back to applicant for the review. I didn't add proposed with conditions because really I didn't see any appropriate conditions of approval.
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
Anything the applicant would desire to put in tonight? Okay. I think we understand each other. We'll close for deliberations then. Can I have a motion on the findings of fact?
Move to adopt the findings of fact as put forth in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment as revised.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to adopt the findings of facts as put forth in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Spielmeyer?
Then we have the decision, and I think since this is essentially equivalent to previous actions by the board, we haven't identified any differences or things we need to identify, so could I have a motion on the decision?
I move to adopt a decision regarding the standards for approval as put forth in the staff report, prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to adopt the decision regarding the standard for approval as put forth in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment.
Spielmeyer?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Got a motion now in order?
Request is proposed by the applicant in case number CUP 0389.2 as discussed by the Board of Adjustment in the staff report. Presented to us tonight, finding that all standards for approval have been satisfied.
Okay. Okay, we got a motion and a second to approve the request as proposed by the applicant in case number CUP 03-89.2 as discussed by the Board of Adjustment in the staff report and prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, finding the standards of approval have been satisfied. Roll, please.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Spielmeyer? McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Bendable presentation.
No, we didn't go fast because it was late. That didn't have anything to do with it.
Word's going to get out. You want to be the last one on the agenda.
Yeah, just to prove it.
Okay, we have then any other business before we proceed?
We have an annual review and a biannual review.
Annual review of CUP 0486 and CUP 0289-1.
This is the Hollis gravel site, Highway 30 and Interstate 35 intersection, this time the southwest quadrant. Good thing the northwest quadrant's in the city of Ames, or else we'd cover and add Cornerstone, we could have all four in. I did go out, and what I'll say is I did not anticipate being here this evening, so I was the one that conducted the inspection and went out, and I'm going to present this evening as a result. The basic findings of facts were laid out in the memo that we prepared for you. These have been established since 1986 and 1989. There's several parcels, and there's two conditional use permits that when we do the annual review, we go out and we do it at the same time. Given the time frame from the time that we lost Sheena Danzer as our code enforcement officer and then lost the position, I forgot to do a couple of these. I'll just be brutally honest there. And this was one. The next one is the other one. So you haven't seen an annual review in a couple of years. But that being said, every annual review we've had, we found everything pretty much has been satisfied in the conditions of approval. Last one we found, they'd put up a sign without a permit. They came forward and got the necessary permits as needed. Staff would make two recommendations based on the annual review that was conducted. That was done June 24th, by the way. We did find that it was in compliance with all conditions of approval for both conditional use permits. We do recommend that the requirement for an annual review for both permits be removed, and it just fall under the action that the board has done with past ones, that if we receive any complaints, we follow up accordingly and bring them as necessary to the Board of Adjustment. And then we also ask that, since we have two different conditional use permits, they have two different expiration dates. the gravel and sand operation, extraction operation. It does take several 30-plus years to get from the beginning to the end of the processing. It makes sense to have both have the same date. And we do recommend that the extension date be extended from 2027 through 2035 for the first conditional use permit, which was established in 1986. That would make them having the consistent expiration.
So that both permits would have the January 1st, 2035?
Yeah. And so with that, you may accept staff's recommendation. Don't make any, or don't accept staff's or do anything else you see fit.
Move we accept the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to accept the staff recommendation associated with the annual review of CUP 04-86 and CUP 02-89 that would essentially remove the requirement for annual review and would make the effective date of the two conditional use permits to both be January 1st, 2035. Roll, please.
Gilmeyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
We have an annual report for CUP 05-08.
Right. This is a Zen Shootis, our Scorpion Gulch firing range. Those of you that have been on the board for several years will recall this. This is actually like the second iteration of the conditional use permit. The first one was issued in 2006, the two-year time frame, and then it was reissued through a new case in 2008. This one hasn't fallen through the cracks as bad as the previous one. We've done biannuals as necessary, only we missed the 2012 one. Staff did conduct the biannual review on June 23rd, 2014. We did find generally it is in compliance with the required conditions of approval. The applicant did note that the rear signage along the perimeter, which is facing crop, the board required it to have signage that's a shooting range. Those fell with one of the last floods we had. He has new ones. He's going to put them up, but it's just a matter of getting back there to do it. And so I reiterated that was a condition of approval, and to maintain compliance with the conditions of approval, he needed to get that done sooner rather than later. Staff would also recommend that the requirement for a biannual review on this one be removed by the board, and again, just have it be part of our normal enforcement, and if complaints are received, bring it forward.
Except on the staff report, it says direct staff to schedule a 2015 annual review. Is that in conflict to remove?
Well, that was one of your alternatives, board actions. Direct staff can accept it should be a biannual report for CUP 0508 and direct staff to schedule a 2016 biannual. That's
and
one of your,
I got caught between that and the expiration date. So how have any feedback from the neighbors during the last couple of years? So everything seems to be copacetic?
Honestly, I was a little bit, I was maybe wondering if they were even in existence. Because we had not received any complaints, not that we were looking for that, but it was kind of contentious when it was reissued in 2008. We have not received anything.
Motion?
I move we accept the annual report. CUP 0508. Direct staff to schedule a 2016.
First and
half. Those are choices.
I understand.
Okay.
I still think we need a review. That's why I'm going we still have an annual.
A biannual.
Second.
Want to deal with the expiration date at the same time?
This one doesn't have an expiration date. It was just the other one.
Yeah, my sheet's mixed up. Never mind. Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the annual report for CUP 05-08 and direct staff to schedule a 2016 biannual review with the applicant.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Meyer? Miller?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Any general comments from the board? Any comments from staff?
I have a question. How often are those sign information we talked about with vetters, when was the last time that was reviewed? And do we maybe need to consider increasing some of those numbers? Because with speed limits of 65 on Highway 30, they need a bigger sign so that you can find those businesses before you're at the turn.
I think the last time we reviewed them was probably 2001. In that 2000 to 2002 time frame, we did an extensive update at that point, and they pretty much have stayed the same since then. When we developed those, we did some extensive study looking at speed limit ranges and visibility, did some testing. This does, at that point, based on 65, 300 square feet would allow, and that's a pretty good size sign,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
Does allow for visibility for existing businesses. Is that cumulative?
That's the number that, I mean, you think about that business, you think about John Deere, you think about DuPont, they're going to have a lot of signage.
And John Deere and DuPont will be inside city limits.
Right.
So those will meet a different standard. And I quite honestly, I don't know what the city standard is for signage.
Does the state have any information about signage that they utilize being on Highway 30?
State gives a little bit yes and no. They in some areas will not allow external signs on a site, and then I don't remember the exact limitation, but they don't necessarily want to see proliferation billboards on the heavily traveled roadways. So they're outside a DOT right away, but they still need to get a DOT permit. And the DOT won't issue a permit until we've signed off on it.
One last question. If they have a sign on their building, that doesn't count.
That
does
not count towards the cumulative.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I think staff has at least heard our concerns. And my concern is, I think the traveling public will get accustomed to whatever the standard is unless you allow it to be up there, you know, big, little. Your custom, but I have some empathy for people with larger or multiple building sites, and you've got to have direction signs, which are really not the commercial signs. And so I really do have some empathy for that sort of stuff, which says, you know, deliver stuff back here and that kind of thing. So, you know, something. I think there needs to be on a small single building site, it's obviously not an issue. But when you get to these larger sites and you start to discount that, pretty soon you're... So that would be the concern, I think, that the board in general would like to put on the record.
In the past, what you've done is when you've had areas of the regulations that the board deems may be worth staff looking into, you've drafted or you've written a letter from the chair to the chair of the Board of Supervisors just asking that the Board of Supervisors direct staff to look into this matter.
I may just bring such a draft next month. Assuming we meet. Okay. Anything for staff at all? Okay. Well, thank you very much, but we will stand adjourned.